This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Anders Gustafsson jumped up from his straw pallet, struck a match, and relit the oil lamp. What was the time now? How soon could he start for North America? He teased open the gold case of the watch grandfather had given him. At that moment, when Uncle Torgus burst into the barn with a great bang of the door. Anders, you oaf, wasting my lamp oil in the middle of the night? He smelled of hard spirits. The cattle, accustomed to Torgus's rages, neither lowed nor bellowed. This is G.P. Gottlieb, host for New Books in Literature, a podcast channel on the New Books Network. And today I'm talking to Larry Summers about his debut novel, The Price of Passage, a tale of immigration and liberation. The historical saga begins in Norway with protagonist Anders Gustafsson bound for 7 years of servitude to his uncle. He manages to escape and makes his way to a ship bound for New Orleans in America. There, Anders is shocked to watch as slaves are sold in the marketplace. He almost loses his own freedom by standing up for a runaway slave. He's saved by a gentleman who later offers him a job. Anders seeks to make an honest living, to live with dignity, and to help those who need it in this tale, set in the years leading up to the abolition of slavery. Hi, Larry. Thanks for joining me today.
Hi, Galit. It's nice to be here.
So I read that your protagonist is a fictional retelling of your great-grandfather's life. How did you come to write the story as a novel?
Galit, I was completely ignorant of my family's history before the people that I knew, before my parents and grandparents. And sometime in early adulthood, my father mentioned in passing that we had some Norwegian people in our background. And I thought, well, that's interesting. And my wife, who was very much interested in genealogy, started looking into their background, and she got some interesting facts. And she this was about the time I started trying to seriously write fiction. And I was casting about for a subject, and my wife came to me and said, "Your great-great-grandfather, Anders Gustafsson, would be perfect for a 1 to 2 page report that we could hand in at the Sons of Norway Lodge, and we would get a badge for that." And I said, stop bothering me with this kind of stuff. Can't you see I'm trying to find a subject to write on? But she persisted, and eventually I wrote the 1 to 2 page report on Anders Gustafsson, and it forced me to look at the information she had developed. And I was fascinated because Anders got onto a ship in February 1853 in Norway, and 7 weeks later got off the ship in the port of New Orleans. And I thought, well, that's interesting. I didn't know any Norwegians went to New Orleans. And then furthermore, Anders did not go where Norwegians are supposed to go, which, as you may know, is Wisconsin and Minnesota and North Dakota. He went instead to downstate Illinois, specifically to Menard County, which is just north of Springfield. And then a couple of years later, he married a young woman, Maria Nybro, who also was in Menard County, but who came from the same small fishing village that Anders came from in Norway. So they had to have known each other, and yet they came over separately and apparently did not decide to get married until after they were both over here in the same little town. So all these things intrigued me, and I thought maybe I could write a good story out of their life. Mm-hmm. And that's how it got started.
Interesting. What was happening in 1850s Norway that led so many to come to America?
Well, the short answer is there were too many people and not enough land. It was partly a result of the fact that in the early 1800s, they began vaccinating for smallpox. And all of a sudden, not nearly as many infants were dying. So there were more and more people, and there were only a certain number of farms that could be inherited. So everybody kind of slid down the social scale, and a lot of them looked to America as the way out.
Mm-hmm. Anders is bound in servitude to his uncle. Can you explain how that happened, and was that very common?
I think it was the kind of arrangement that was sometimes made in Norway. I'm not sure how common it was, but essentially Anders wanted to get ahead in the world. He didn't have a farm. His uncle had the farm. And he thought, if I could get an education, maybe I could get somewhere. So he got his uncle to finance his education at agricultural college and became, as in his words, a trained agriculturist. And then he, in exchange for that, he gave his uncle a pledge of 7 years of labor at his farm. And so he became essentially an indentured servant for the sake of getting a little education.
Right. Anders knows Maria Nybro from Norway in the story, and as you say, possibly in real life. Why is her family name not the typical daughter of someone, the way you explain in the book? Also, can you introduce her?
Sure. Maria is the son of a boat builder by the name of Christian Conradson Nybro. And the reason the family, you'll notice that Christian Conradson did indeed have a patronymic in his name. He was the son of Conrad, but he also had an actual surname, Nybro, and it appears from what we've, from the research that my wife has done, that the Nybro family originated at a place in Denmark called Nybro, and at some distant time emigrated to Norway and kept the name Nybro. So not all Norwegians had only a patronymic. Some of them also had place names as a true surname.
Mm. Anders befriends a family on the ship with two sons and two daughters. Can you introduce the family and explain the situation?
Sure. This is the family led by the formidable Kristen Harald's daughter. And Kristen Harald's daughter is the wife of a man named Osmond Ryerson. And Osmond had decided, like many people, that he was going to try his fortune in America, and he went on ahead to find a good piece of land. And when he found it in Menard County, Illinois, he sent for his wife and four children. There were two really grown sons, Ryer and Tor, and two younger teenage daughters, whose names I should know because I wrote them, but Karin and Britta. And so Kristen Harald's daughter found herself at the head of a small platoon getting onto the ship, going to Norway, traveling as head of household because her husband was already in America.
Okay. Although Andres was himself bound in servitude to his uncle, he'd never seen the selling of a human being until he witnesses a slave auction. Why is he so shocked?
I think it was just a sort of a foreign concept to ordinary people in Scandinavia. Number one, that anybody should be black rather than white. That was a revelation to him. But number two, that would be a reason for enslaving somebody and a complete ownership arrangement. They had in Norway various social classes, and there were people known as crofters, who were small farmers that were essentially like what we would call sharecroppers, but they were still free people. They were not owned, and nor were people who on an indenture like Anders actually owned by anyone. And so when he saw an auction being held at which human beings were the property being sold, it was just a rude awakening.
Because he sold himself into servitude. That was probably the difference.
And there was a limited time.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. The story is told from, you tell the story from three viewpoints, Anders, Maria, and then Daniel. Can you introduce Daniel?
Daniel is a teenage boy who is a slave who has lived all his life on Hurricane Plantation in Mississippi. Hurricane Plantation was a very special place, and it's a real historic place. It was a plantation whose owner, the older brother of Jefferson Davis, held social theories derived from the English reformer or the Welsh reformer Robert Owen. And he, Joseph Davis, appears to have felt that if the plantation was just organized right, and he had about 300 slaves, that they could have a sweet, harmonious, little utopian society. And it never seems to have occurred to him that was incompatible with chattel slavery. Daniel thought otherwise, and having being orphaned, having recently lost his mother, he had nothing to lose. And so he made an attempt to escape.
What was your research like, for example, in describing the Maroon community that Daniel runs away to? Where did you find information about that sort of thing?
There's a wonderful book about Maronage, as it's called, in the continental United States, in the southern states, which is a subject that has not been very well investigated compared to the Maroons of the Caribbean islands. But this, a woman by the name of Dr. Sylviane Diouf, has written a wonderful book, just piecing together fragments, really, of history that show, that give an impression of what life was like for these Maroons, who were people who liberated themselves from plantations and went and lived on the outskirts, in the woods, in the wilderness, or in places where they wouldn't be easily found and recaptured. And of course, they had to live a very basic subsistence lifestyle, but they preferred that to slavery.
Yeah. Maria's aunt is a peripheral character, but she's so interesting. Can you describe her, how she came to America with Maria? What was going on with her?
Aunt Osa, I had in the original manuscript of the book, I had a very elaborate backstory on Aunt Osa, and for artistic reasons, I had to kind of cut it out. But Aunt Osa was a little girl who was born and was just not quite right. You know, there were things about her that were different, and she had a misshapen head, and she seemed to not catch on to all the things that young children catch on to. And yet she was loved and prized in her family. And as she grew up, she learned a lot about old Norwegian folk tales and all the kind of typical women's work. She was a great cook and did wonderful things of that sort, but she was also extremely superstitious and in command of all the old superstitions. And she was the kind of a person who, when Maria came over to America, Aunt Osa was already an old woman, and Maria promoted her own trip to America on the grounds that she was going to look after Aunt Osa, because it was felt that she needed, a little bit of assistance. Well, Aunt Osa is the kind of character that one just loves to write, because she, in a way, she's sort of the fool on the hill. She's always popping up with some brief expression that says what nobody else has thought about. And mm-hmm. So I really enjoyed Aunt Osa as a character.
And she ends up being really important to Maria. She does a lot of the work. She's a wonderful character. You talk about the Douglas Lincoln election and the people in the town and at the store are talking about it. Can you say more about that?
Well, only I think all your listeners know that Lincoln and Douglas ran against each other in 1858 for the U.S. Senate seat in Illinois, which Douglas held at the time. And Douglas was a major national politician, and Lincoln was just a sort of a newcomer, a Johnny-come-lately, on the national political scene. And they had this series of debates in Illinois, which came very near to electing Mr. Lincoln to the Senate, but he didn't quite put it over the top. And but as a result of the debates, he and his positions on slavery became so well known that 2 years later, he successfully ran for president.
It was just a good story, and it was nice to read about it in the book.
Yes, and there are a lot of kind of strange little things that people today don't think about. But for example, nobody voted directly for the president of the United States, and in those days, nobody voted directly for a senator either. If you wanted to vote for Mr. Lincoln, you had to vote for the man who in your county was running for the state legislature on Lincoln and on the Republican Party, and then he would vote for Lincoln in the legislature, and that's how the Senate race was decided. So, just I like going into little things like that because, well, it's educational.
Yeah, history. Mr. Elliot is a moneylender, the store owner, and he's very important to lots of people in the town. Is he evil or is he just being a businessman?
Well, I'm not going to characterize him before people have had a chance to read the book, but I will just say that Mr. Elliot is a person who seems one way to some people and another way to other people. And I think I'll just let it go at that.
That's exactly right. Later in the story, Daniel, formerly a slave, goes to fight for the Union Army during the Civil War. Can you discuss about his unit?
Well, actually, Daniel enlists in the Union Navy rather than the Army. And that's one of the things that I was kind of surprised to discover. It's well known that black recruits could not join the Union Army until after 1863. And there's been famous movies about that, for instance, Glory, about the 54th Massachusetts. But black men had been in the United States Navy from the founding of the Republic. And there were always some, and they began enlisting more during the Civil War. And that doesn't mean that it was a matter of perfect equality. They tended to be enlisted for very low-grade subordinate positions, such as stoking the furnace on steamboats and things like that. But they could be in the Navy long before they could be in the Army. Daniel runs into a situation where he meets a couple of black sailors, and they sort of introduce him to the possibility of serving in the Navy.
What's going on with the area in Illinois, Menard County, that Anders farms, that most of the action takes place in this area? Is it still farmland? Did you get a chance to visit?
Oh, yes.
Is there still a Norwegian community? What's going on there?
It's not a Norwegian community, and it never was. One of the interesting things about Anders and Maria is that unlike Norwegians, for example, in farther north in Wisconsin and Minnesota, who had elaborate social welfare systems and had their own newspapers and had a real Norwegian community, Anders and Maria were among only a few Norwegians in Menard County at that time. One of the implications is they had to learn English and learn American farming methods and American ways and manners and so forth very quickly. So one upshot of that is that Anders attaches himself to an American mentor by the name of Benjamin Lake, who is an abolitionist, and Anders finds Lake a wealth of information about America, but he also becomes moved to assist in the anti-slavery struggle and the Underground Railway. So one of the things that was happening in Menard County at that time was lots of fugitive slaves were escaping across the central Illinois landscape, and they were chased by slave hunters, slave catchers trying to get them back on behalf of their owners in the South. And they were sheltered and protected by people in an informal but very effective network known as the Underground Railroad. So that's what made the story interesting to me, was that Anders and Maria just happened to have arrived in this particular spot just at the time that the Civil War and the slavery issue were heating up.
So Leary, you finished this one. It's coming out like today, right? Today is your launch. Happy launch day. What are you working on next?
Well, I have, I'm on the 1 yard line for my next book. And unfortunately, as you well know, when you have a publication contract, all of a sudden you almost stop being a writer and become a book salesman all overnight. And so a lot of the things I've been doing lately to promote this book, Price of Passage, which I dearly love, and it's my favorite child, it's been like pulling teeth to find any time to get beyond the 1 yard line and into the end zone on my next project, which is a wonderful, it's very much different book. It's a historical fiction, but it's a wonderful book, a middle grades book about a young boy growing up in the 1950s. And his name is Izzy Mahler, and the name of the book is Izzy Strikes Gold. And it's all written, but, you know, there are all sorts of little things you have to do to make the manuscript perfect before you send it in to anybody. And I'm just trying to find the time to do those things.
Ah, good luck with everything. Happy reading, happy writing. And again, happy launch day. Thank you so much for joining me, Larry Summers. It's been a pleasure.
Galit, I've really enjoyed it. And I would come back on your podcast anytime.
Again, thanks for joining me. And this is G.P. Gottlieb, author of the Whipped and Sipped Mystery Series and host for New Books in Literature, a podcast channel on the New Books Network. Today, I've been talking to Larry Summers, author of Price of Passage, a tale of immigration and liberation. Hope you're all able to lose yourself in a good book today and always.